Russell and Carmel. This is November the 17th, 1978, and it's tape number 363, side one. Last week on the tape, accompanying the tape, I sent a map of Poland, and I wanted to make a correction there. I did have another world atlas that I didn't bring in because this was such a clear close-up, but where number one is, where Katowice is, with the arrow pointing to K-A-T-O-W-I-C-E, Wadowice and Katowice I mistook for the same place because Krakow is spelled both with a C and a K. But if you take your pencil or look at an atlas, Wadowice, the home of the current Pope John Paul II, is right between Auschwitz and Krakow. Auschwitz is Auschwitz. And he's right next to the camp at Auschwitz, and he lived in the town of Krakow part of his life and Wadowice when he was younger. So put him right between Auschwitz and Krakow instead of to the left where Katowice is. You can make that correction on your little map. There was a lot of speculation in the news about the death of Pope John Paul, and I'll share some of those headlines with you in case you didn't see all of them. We'll go through some of those on this tape. And of course, when somebody dies so suddenly and has no autopsy and so many discrepancies, it is immediately mandatory to study who succeeds that person and comes in line next, because if there is a murder, then there's a total change of policy, political policy, and then we must follow that successor. And when I heard that Pope John Paul II had come from Poland and was handpicked by Mr. Zebrzynski and the National Security Council, of course, the links of him to the Bilderbergers and the Trilateral are so strong, and that this was a fellow Lotsman from Poland, that they knew each other, and knowing the position of Zebrzynski in the Cold War, I began to do some work into this poll. It wasn't hard because there were stories in the newspaper about the chemical factory that he worked at and the quarry he worked at and locating the town and where he was. Of course, I was frightened that he had worked at Auschwitz, and I think it matters to the world in general to know just what he was doing from the ages of 19 to 25 and what his position was. The headlines and articles have said he helped some Jews, but I very seriously doubt that he would be selected by the most extreme right-wing cardinals and Mr. Brzezinski and the people around him if he was saving Jews during World War II. I don't think he would have lived very long, and he was spared. And I called Bob Trevor on KGO, that's a talk radio show here in San Francisco, the night before the ceremony, bringing in the Pope. I want to say the inauguration, because he's really like an American president, as far as I can see, a puppet of these powers that be, hand-selected. I called Bob Trevor on KGO and just brought up the question that I was not able to find through many telephone calls where he did, in fact, work in Poland. I didn't originate the idea that the Catholic Church was fascist. Many, many books about it, and with that movie, The Holocaust, on television, long series for people to get introduced to exactly what Auschwitz was, I thought it was a pertinent question to ask on the radio if we could find out where the new Pope worked. And Bob Trevor was taken by surprise. It was a late-night call, and he immediately said, "Don't send your letters to me. I'll give them to May. I don't want to get in the middle of this." And he passed it off and was running scared. And he sent me a package of mail that he got about this question, and some of it was very supportive. And I'm going to read you one letter because, of course, these cowards sent unsigned letters, no return address. Well, he signs it Joe America, just Joe America. And this is the letter that he wrote, dated October 21st, 1978. "Bob, why do you allow yourself to be involved with May Brussel? She's vicious and evil and is connected with the Communist Party, the local party, namely the Russian Council. She's using KGO as her sounding board for the Russian Council. She spreads and spews out propaganda about the CIA and the FBI. She spreads outlandish lies about decent citizens and that much crucified man, Richard Nixon. Now she's taking after the Pope. The Kremlin is livid because a Pole has been chosen for Pope. They cannot stand having this man as Pope. Personally, I fear for his life. If they cannot smear his good name and discredit him, they will assassinate him. Their fears for all their satellites, these Catholic countries such as Yugoslavia, Czechoslovakia, Romania, Poland, Russia, have tried to keep God from these countries for 30 years. They've tried, and they have failed. There's 100 million people who are Catholic in Eastern Europe in these fine countries. I forgot to mention Hungary. Can you understand the Soviets' fear? If you cannot, you are a fool. But maybe you understand and deliberately want to help smear this good man. Maybe you are part of the plan. Take care that you don't end up with a sick brain like Ted Gandolfo and May Brussel, who's next. You'll see. I'll hear it in her hate for this country. I hear it in her hate for this country. Your hate shows more and more. Your voice becomes livid when anyone tries to rebut your radical views. It shows over the airways, Bob. May Brussel is reaching the end of her trail, on her trail of hate and destruction. If you're smart, steer clear of this vicious bitch. The powers that be have given her a lot of rope. They've been lenient so far. But so far, he has, in quotation marks, is not forever. Remember these words. Her family has disavowed her. They don't want or have anything to do with her. Her family is the Magnum family, a fine, civic-minded, upright family. She is a disgrace and a troublemaker. All the other communicators will have nothing to do with this dangerous woman. Either you're soft in the head or you're working hand in hand. Signed, listener, Joe America. He's talking about the San Francisco branch of Magnans. My grandfather, my father's father, was married to my grandmother, and he also had another woman at the same time and divorced my grandmother. And I never even saw the San Francisco Magnans. I've never even met them. My family, parents are friendly with them now. They were never part of my childhood, and except for my immediate grandmother, my father's mother. And we never had any part of them. They never supported my father, helped him through school or through his training or anything. They just latched on to him when he was well-known and famous in later years. When he was 70 years old or 75, they made contact with him. And there's been no disassociation with me from the Magnan family because I've never even shaken hands with them, and that's how far removed he is from the facts. But the interesting thing in here, I think, is that he says that she's reaching her end, and he mentions Ted Gandolfo, you know, and says May Brussel will be next, because I feel that Ted was compromised. He had a television show in New York every week, and he was a very good researcher. He was tape recording all the various speeches of different people involved in the assassinations and calling radio talk shows. And then all of a sudden, one evening in May, he just went kaput. He had called me that day. He used to call me every single day from New York. And now he is like a basket case. And this man mentioned that and said that they've given her enough rope. And maybe the things that I'm feeling, the threats I'm feeling, are coming in from this kind of person, because he signs his name Joe American and says, but so far is it forever. Remember these words, and I feel that the station is monitored, and they will see how far I go and then probably want to take some steps. That's why I didn't want to go up to KGO in person and be on the show like a month ago or so. In order to study the politics of the Vatican and the shenanigans going on, the manipulation of nations and fascism, you have to take an overlay of the various popes, Pope Pius XI in 1922, who came in just at the time that Germany and Italy were rearming, and he was the Pope until 1939. That was through the years of the Spanish Civil War and the approval of Mussolini and Hitler sending in troops into Spain. And, of course, Cardinal Pacelli was behind that and was supporting that all along. 1939, Cardinal Pacelli became the Pope. Just at the time when Germany was ready to invade Poland, he took over. Just prior to that, and he had been given notice by the Germans that they were going into Poland, and they had already signed an agreement in 1929 that the Vatican would not interfere with the invasion of countries or with any form of fascism. That was called the Treatment of Conciliation, February 11, 1929. And that was the conditions by which the Vatican became extremely wealthy in property and various holdings when Mussolini, the Premier of Italy, made a deal and gave $100 million to the Vatican in Italian industry if they would remain neutral. Now, that wasn't much to invest because they were going to pillage all these countries of Eastern Europe of all their wealth, their art, gold, labor, slave labor, and various minerals and products. So 100 million went to the Vatican because the great deal of these people in the East there were Catholics, and they could tell them to submit and give in to Hitler as he came through, which they did, and there was no speech from the church to stop them. In exchange for all of these goodies, this 100 million and lots of acres and buildings and so forth, the Treatment of Conciliation kept the Pope neutral while World War II went on, and they were silent about the death and the invasion. In 1958, when Pope Pius XII died, we had John XXIII, who was a very kind gentleman who got along with John Kennedy and Khrushchev, and it almost looked like a renaissance at the end of the war years. The death of the popes are interesting in addition to their political alliances, because John the 23rd, who was close to John Kennedy, died June 3rd, 1963. And in November, John Kennedy would be dead. And then Brazil, which is largely all of Latin and South America, is Catholic, was overthrown with a military dictatorship. And the Dominican Republic then was overthrown. And, of course, the intelligence community that had killed John Kennedy had taken over all of Central and South America, with the exception of Cuba, I suppose. And this death of John was in June 3rd, 1963. And then came Pope Paul VI, that's the secretary to Pius XII, the Pope who was in through the entire war from 1939, the invasion of Poland, on through all those years. And he was secretary to the Vatican, and I've mentioned before, writing passports for Nazis to Central and South America. The history, the overlay of what was happening and when these men came into power is terribly important. And then for that brief, short period of time, we had John Paul I. Andrew Greeley, a writer from Chicago studying the Catholic Church himself, he's a Roman Catholic priest himself, wrote three articles in the Los Angeles Times. I've given you the dates, very good ones. And the very first one, right after the death of John Paul I, is called The Papacy: From Promise to Uncertainty. And I think that could be the title of an article after John Kennedy was killed, What Do We Do Now? And he says in this first article that this new Pope, John Paul I, did away with a lot of the trappings of the papacy, the throne, the crown, the majestic we. And he said before the next Pope was chosen, there are no more albino Lucianos lurking in the hills of northern Italy. He was elected by a strange coalition, an alliance of the left and the moderate against the far right. And he says that there were 20 votes of the far right, the extremist group, which didn't go to Luciano, and they didn't vote for anybody. They were outnumbered, and so they didn't write their name on the ballot at all. They were left blank, and the reason they were left blank was to protest. The dissenters, he said, were an extreme group of conservatives who served warning by withholding their votes. They warned Pope Paul VI that the new pope had no universal mandate. And he goes on to say that Pope John Paul started with the support of the Third World and some progressive Northern Europeans from France, Belgium, the Dutch, and a few from Brazil, and moderate Italians, but he started with a tough warning from the traditionalists, members of the Roman Curia. And then he said in his article on October the 1st, 1978, in quotes, there will be another election, but this time it may not be a religious experience for anyone. right off the bat, there were discrepancies in the Pope's death. Newsweek said without any warning, a heart attack ended his sunny reign, and Time magazine was saying he died of a massive stroke. His last words were supposed to have been regarding a right-wing student who was killed. They kill each other, even the young people. And another account said, are those people shooting themselves again? This really is terrible. The story goes that the secretary of the Vatican, Cardinal Jean Vigeau, smashed the ring that the Pope was wearing, the traditional ring with the inlaid seal, smashed it with a hammer, and then there's another account that the papal ring wasn't smashed because there wasn't time to make one for him. There's an account that he was propped up on pillows, half-sitting position with the reading lamp still on, and then there were accounts that he was slumped forward in bed with his face pressed into open books. Some accounts said that his face was contorted, robbed of a serene smile that many had found endearing, and other stories said that the smile that earned him the reputation around the world as a smiling pope was on his face. A UPI story, it was a miracle. His face was absolutely serene. Here was a man with a massive heart attack whose face was as calm itself. His body was discovered by Sister Vincenza, a nun from the Child Mary Institute. And then again, his body was discovered by the Pope's secretary, Father John McGee. When the UPI reporters tried to interview Father McGee or Sister Vincenza, they were told that they were not available, that Father McGee had left the country, and that journalists couldn't interview either one of them to see who was there first. One report in the Rome newspaper said that his body was indicative of someone who got a fatal dose of a South American drug, curare, which is a muscle relaxant and causes cessation of all body functions. And on the other hand, the Vatican physician said he had a massive heart attack or stroke, which is almost impossible to die with a smile on your face because you do have some pain just grasping at the time of that trauma. He was supposed to be in bed reading Thomas Aquinas's Imitation of Christ, a medieval book of devotions. Later it was said he was reading personal writings, and the Vatican City on October 3rd, 1978, said the Vatican radio clarified reports about what the Pope was doing when his fatal attack came. He was not reading as announced, but he was holding pieces of paper, some personal writing. When he was elected, it was announced that he was in good health. He had a complete physical examination and was in excellent health. After he died, they said that he was a sick man. The Washington Post, October 2nd, 1978, wrote an article and said, sources said that in our modern era, the late Cardinal Eugene Tisserand of France, Dean of the Sacred College of Cardinals, believed that his patron, Pope Pius XI, was murdered. When Pope Pius XI died in 1939, Tisserand contended he was about to denounce the Vatican's 1929 Concordat with Italy's fascist government. The year 1939 is when Jack Ruby moved from Los Angeles to Chicago, become secretary of the Waste Handlers Union, when the FBI, headed by J. Edgar Hoover, joined Interpol, July 20th, 1939, which was headed by Meyer Heydrich, the man who came up with the idea for I.G. Farben of the solution of the Jewish problem of killing the Jews. That was the year that the FBI joined into the international police that was headed by the Nazi organizations. That's the year that Howard Hughes personally met Charles Lindbergh. It was the end of the Spanish Republic. It was the turning point of Hitler's career, his conquest in the Czechoslovakian area. It's when Roosevelt was asked by Hitler and Mussolini to sign a non-aggression pact and the German invasion of Poland in September of 1939. It seems all right for the Washington Post to write an article about the possible murder of Pope Pius XI during that crucial year, but you can't say these things on KGO. According to UPI, Pope John Paul was very happy. The night before he died, he was laughing, he was talking and smiling, and there wasn't a sign, not a single sign of anything wrong, according to Monsignor Jacques Martin, prefect of the household. Cardinal Villot was with him the last night. He's also the man who was supposed to have smashed the non-existent ring. He said they had a good dinner together, he with his secretaries. At 9 o'clock, he called a friend in Milan and talked to him, and they talked a long time, and he went to bed and was reading, which was his custom. The Cardinal Villot is secretary, was Secretary of the State. He might still be, I think he is. He immediately assumed leadership of the Pope, which he did when Pope Paul VI died on August the 6th, 1978. The cause of death was a myocardial infarction, a heart attack, which, according to a UPI story, is impossible to diagnose without autopsy. There have been cases in the United States where bodies were exhumed and curare that deadly drug in them, and the original diagnosis of the coroner and the doctors at the time was heart attack. Without an autopsy, it's impossible to determine the cause of death, even though they said it was heart attack, and then they also said there was a hemorrhage, a blood hemorrhage. As soon as the Pope was dead, there were many articles in the United States as well as in Italy about his death. I have one here from the Las Vegas Sun, which states several Italian newspapers Saturday and Sunday took issue with the Vatican's decision not to order an autopsy or to confirm the physician's findings that the Pope had died of a heart attack. The press quoted the medical authorities as saying that it could only be an autopsy that could determine such a sudden cause of death, which started the newspaper rumors to spread in various parts of Italy that the Pope may have fallen victim to some kind of foul play. The UPI story in the Los Angeles Times said evidence claimed for Pope death inquiry. A conservative Catholic organization said Friday it has concrete evidence to back demands for the investigation of possible foul play in the death of Pope John Paul I. They will work through the Vatican to avoid a scandal. There are 50,000 members of this organization in 21 countries, and they are considering bringing charges of murder. We have concrete evidence that demand our investigation. We want to observe the legal niceties and work through the Vatican, they said. The Vatican has an independent legal system, which is different than in Rome. Neither the Pope nor the cardinals that are in power now should be able to stop it. This is October the 10th, 1978, UPI. It went on, people all over the world are asking the same questions. Where are the facts? Where are the answers? Where is the death certificate? The Vatican line about not being able to give an autopsy is a colossal lie. Autopsies have been done on popes in the past. That's Los Angeles Times. They had another article, October the 6th, in the Los Angeles Times, with a lead article titled, Like Everyone Else, the Papal Electors Must Consider Bills and Blood Pressure, and it said people are bringing up the possibility of poison in connection with Pope John Paul's death. The doctors are still complaining that Pope Paul VI need not have died. He could have used intensive care therapy. Others are wondering when the last time was that Papa Luciana had his blood pressure taken. If massive brain hemorrhage, then it meant high blood pressure. Newspaper writers with the curial connections, and we'll go into the curia, has said the strain of being a pope was too great for the man with no experience in the Vatican, but meanwhile there's a search being made for his health records, which is not available. Why no physical exams for candidates? Why no autopsy in times of sudden death? Autopsies would put to rest foolish rumors. Dignity and the importance of the office should make accurate information about the state of a candidate's health absolutely essential. That's the Los Angeles Times. A small newspaper called The Spotlight said there would be no use for an autopsy, even though they had a long article on the possible murder of the Pope, because nobody can be charged with murder. There is no way any Italian authority could charge anyone with murder in the Vatican City. This is an independent state in the city of Rome, and it's impossible to have any jurisdiction over. Again, that goes back to 1929, the agreement that the Vatican could be a law unto itself from then on, and nobody could be charged with murder inside the Vatican, of course. The UPI had a story October the 4th, 1978, called No Autopsy. The Vatican has said no autopsies will be performed. It was the orders of Pope Paul VI in 1975 regarding papal transitions that no autopsies would be allowed. I think I mentioned that last week on the tape. The New York News has an article by Pete Hamill, October the 14th, 1978, titled The Plausible Melodrama of a Poisoned Pope. And these are some of the quotations. The sudden end of his reign remains clouded with suspicion. Unlucky Luciana might have been knocked off. The conservatives see a dark blood hand of the communists. The left sees the much longer tradition of infamy that belongs to the conservatives. Years ago, Pete Hamill wrote a thriller called A Killing for Christ, but he said, never in recent times have there been so many deaths of such a sudden nature, so close together, as in the Vatican. Much of the so-called real world has come to resemble the structure of fiction. And of course, we can do the overlay of history. Never before have there been so many close deaths, such as Robert Kennedy, John Kennedy, Malcolm X, Martin Luther King, Medgar Evans, Whitney Young, Adlai Stevenson, a whole list of deaths, a litany of deaths of people that had something in common, a thread of decency running through them. Pete Hamill went on, the revelations about the CIA have disclosed that real men with real guns have imaginations more lurid than any mere writers. These are respectable people who make alliances with the mafia, a gang of perverted killers to murder Fidel Castro, and God knows what else they dreamed of. Now Italy has changed, and since its birth in 1945, Italy's Christian Democratic Party has been an ally of the Vatican. This was immediately at the end of the war when the Christian Democratic Party became friends of the Vatican. And again, that's when these passports were being written for these Nazi war criminals by Secretary Montini, who went on to be the Pope. The Vatican was very active in relocating them in Central South America, Africa, Asia, and they came to the United States also. Pete Hamill said the CIA had, in fact, been the midwife. It even delivered $80,000 to Pope Pius XII in 1950 in an effort to have him issue a pastoral message. He declared it was a mortal sin for Catholics to vote for communists. This is written in the New York News, how the United States government and the CIA had paid $80,000 to Pope Pius XII to influence the Catholics to turn against the Russians and support the Cold War period in the 1950s. Next week I'll go into that Pope Paul VI and his CIA connections and the money he was getting through the Vatican from the Central Intelligence Agency. But even before him, Hamill reminds us that there was 80,000, and I'm sure that is a minimum, there's more than that, to affect the speeches of Pope Paul XII on his what they called the pastoral messages to the Catholics. He says, what was the Christian Democratic Party that was formed, the political party, the ally of the Vatican, in 1945 in Italy after the war, those members spent most of World War II right inside the Vatican. He said they were hiding in the Vatican, they were afraid of the communists, and they were fighting the partisans in the north while the communists were fighting there. They were hiding in the Vatican. And when the war was over, the Christian Democrats, who were drowning in corruption and inefficiency, came out and aligned with the Vatican to set up a political party in Italy that worked with the United States and formed the modern Vatican after World War II. He said the Pope is a major partner in the Christian Democratic Party, and the United States provides the bulk of the financial contributions to the modern Vatican, aside from its own investments, and to Latin America. And the church supplies the greatest number of human beings. The Vatican has these Catholics in Latin America, and the message from the intelligence community to the Pope comes through the voice of the Pope, but it's a political message paid for by our Central Intelligence Agency. another article, a UPI story in our papers in the United States. Controversy rages over no autopsy. Another group was demanding an investigation into the Pope's death. And in that article, there's an interesting quotation of Cardinal Terence Cook from New York City, who said, "I understand the suspicion of some people, but we are past the point of autopsies. Certainly people are free to discuss the issue. I can understand these matters would be discussed. Some people might feel uneasy that his death was so sudden. But heart attacks or strokes are killers all over the world." We all know that people do die of heart attacks and strokes, but they usually have physical symptoms that go along with that diagnosis. And there was a lot of mystery and contradiction in this particular Pope's death, and that's why the autopsies were required. The Washington Post had another article, "The Vatican Criticized for Lack of Autopsy." This is by Ronald Coven, October the 2nd. "The Vatican's failure to order an autopsy on the body of Pope John Paul was criticized in some quarters yesterday and gave rise to speculation as to a cause of death. For centuries, the palaces or the underground passages of the Vatican have no longer been the setting of criminal actions, but they have been abundantly exploited by popular, vulgar literature." And he goes on, "Just for that reason, because there's been novels and stories about the murders in the Vatican, just for that reason, the window should have become open and they should have been transparent, and we should have decided to have an autopsy so that there wouldn't be any more rumors about murders in the Vatican." On the other side of this tape, I won't do any more headlines on the death. There's suspicions of murder, but we'll go into some of the reasons why the people believe that he could have been killed, some comments and editorials, articles.